Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast, Artisense. Let's chat. As always, I'm joined by Vivek. Vivek, would you like to say hi?
Hi. Okay.
Hi. So I was listening to the last episode, and I realized how obnoxious I sound, and my voice is just a pain to listen to. So I would like to apologize. Anyways, we can get on with this episode. Our topic for today is we'll just be talking about voting rights in general and how sort of all-encompassing it is. And if you've listened to any of our other episodes, you know this is sort of like a prevalent topic that we touch on all the time. Are you typing right now as I'm speaking, as I'm giving the intro?
I'm just turning the volume up so I can hear you better.
Okay. Good save. Anyways, like I said, we were talking about voting rights today and sort of how it touches every aspect of our everyday lives. And like I was saying, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know it's a prevalent topic that we talk about a lot, and we sort of connect a lot of what we're saying back to voting and how important it is. So yeah, Vivek, do you want to take it away?
Sure. Just one thing before we do begin, we will be donating all of the proceeds from the AdSense that we gain to the NAACP and their, you know, fund to fight for the expansion of voting rights and, you know, access to the polls for more and more voters, and especially voters of color, and especially from that Black voters. So yeah. But I think the first thing we wanted to start with was relating to the history of voting. And it's about how even something as simple as voting, you know, the bastion of the democratic, you know, process and everything, was still, you know, limited in the beginning. And what was it limited by? Well, racism, sexism, all of that fun stuff. So in the beginning, as many people probably know, there were huge restrictions imposed on both people of color and women with regards to voting. There were specifically race related. There was the Jim Crow South and their, you know, how they were making it harder for Black people to vote with things like a poll tax, a literacy test before you vote. And you can kind of even see now a continuation of those same tactics. Maybe not same tactics per se, but different tactics to also, you know, keep Black people from voting. So I think one of the greatest examples of that was the Georgia voting law, which was, I think, taking place around January. What's it?
Mm-hmm.
So the Georgia voting law was often touted as, you know, this like regressive, super regressive drive to kind of get registered voters, mainly registered voters in Atlanta, registered voters of color, to, you know, not be able to vote anymore. You know, the things that, you know, were circulated the most were that the voting law was prohibiting food or water from being distributed at the polls. It was prohibiting Sunday voting. It was, you know, prohibiting mail-in voting. So just like a little, you know, summary of it, first of all, to just make sure we have it accurate. The new law both limits voting and doesn't limit voting with regards to the ways that I just stated. So first of all, it does shrink the window for voters to request mail ballots. So they can request, they used to be able to request ballots 6 months prior to the election day, whereas the new law says voters can start requesting ballots only 78 days out, whereas counties can only begin sending out the ballots 29 days before election day. So that's one of them. Also, there are new voter ID requirements. And then one of the huge things was that counties and state and the, you know, the state at large can only send mail ballot applications to voters who specifically request them. Now you can imagine if you're, you know, living below the poverty line, if you're working many jobs, maybe more than one, and on top of that, if you have a family to support, this is not going to be your priority. Your priority is going to be, you know, keeping yourself, you know, stable and healthy, keeping everyone around you healthy, and maintaining, you know, maintaining your finances. So the fact that, you know, they've sort of made it so that you have to go out of your way to request ballots is a huge thing. Now, there were a few things that, you know, worked kind of in the opposite direction almost. Like the fact that now there's a minimum number of drop boxes for mail ballots. So some rural counties in the last election didn't have drop boxes. And if they had them in the last election, maybe they didn't have them in elections before. So this law is kind of codifying for the first time. Is it codifying or codifying? Anyway, it's putting into law, into writing, a requirement for a minimum number of drop boxes in each county. It's adding an additional day of early voting, which would be at least two Saturdays of early voting for both primaries and general elections. And it's giving, you know, precincts more resources so that the lines don't get too long. Now, a few things that didn't make it into the bill, you know, when they proposed a block on Sunday voting. Now, as you may or may not know, Black voters typically in Atlanta or directly outside of the perimeter, usually attended their church's Souls to the Polls efforts, right? So the churches would, you know, you would come to church and the churches would have drives, quite literally and figuratively, as Souls to the Polls efforts, so that, you know, they would all vote and they would be able to do it as a community. So they had tried to, with this bill, block Sunday voting. Unfortunately, or well, fortunately, it didn't make it into the bill. And then the other thing that didn't make it into the bill was a ban on absentee voting if you didn't have an excuse. So we thought it was going to be if you don't have a medical note or if you're not over 65, you cannot vote absentee, except now that didn't make it into the bill either, which is another good sign because it just expands access for more people. I talked for a little while now, so I'll turn it over to Kirtana. Kirtana, can I ask you a question, Kirtana? I just want to know, why do you think, let me think how to phrase this. My question is, do you think it's more dangerous for people to know about, I don't know where my question was going. I'll come back and ask you the question again. You go ahead.
No, now I'm piqued by your question.
My question was going to be, oh my God.
Okay. Well, yeah, you did go off for quite a bit there, but it was all good information. I was sort of listening to you and I was like, I wonder why he doesn't talk more in class. Just like, I don't know. I feel like you would leave a lot of people sort of thinking, oh, wow, I really am really dumb. I don't know. I feel like this has nothing to do with the conversation, but I feel like I feel like a lot of people don't, like, you sort of put on this whole, like, I'm so funny and I make stupid jokes persona that people kind of forget how much you really know and how much smarter and more eloquent you are than the rest of them. But I'm going to stop bluffing up your ego right now because...
Yeah, I was like, Kirtana, this is so out of the norm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore. Yeah, even what did you even end on? What were we talking about? Oh, how it also expands voting rights, correct?
Right. How it you know, opens up new opportunities for voting, yes.
Yeah, well, I it's like all things in Congress. It's just divisive, isn't it? It's like they slip in a few extra little things in there to make it seem more approachable and less polarizing, I guess. But yeah. I'm still waiting on that question because.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I was going to ask, I'm not exactly sure, but I think I was going to ask, do you think that by adding in those provisions, you know, adding in that there are a few, you know, things, or no, it was by leaving out those provisions that I said were left out. So the provision about outlawing absentee voting unless you're, you know, 65 or older or have a medical condition. Or shortening, you know, early voting in runoff elections. Do you think by not including those, it almost feels like they're kind of gaslighting us into, like, see, we're not making it harder to vote. You know, like, it seems like they said they were going to do that, and then they took it away purposefully so they could be like, see, we are, you know, we are.
Completely agree. It's like, it's like that whole thing of, like, supremacy, right? Whether it's national supremacy or, like, parental supremacy in your house, where it's, like, you're originally threatened that something's going to be taken away from you, and then in the end it's not. It's totally gaslighting. I completely agree. I also think they sort of, they took a minute and they were like, I think it was almost sort of them realizing, oh, maybe we, they sort of realized the sort of outrage it would spark, because that is a hugely conservative step to be taking. Like limiting the,
right.
Or shortening the time period in which you can apply for mail-in voting, et cetera, or even the absentee ballot thing with people unless you're 65 or older or have a medical condition thing. I think they realize really how conservative that is and the sort of outrage that would spark, especially right now in the Biden administration, mm-hmm. or at least when it was passed in the more sort of securely yeah. Democratic Biden administration. Of course, now things have shaken up with Virginia, and now
mm-hmm. right.
we might be leaning towards a Republican majority, but yes.
Well, that's... Right. Well, that's another thing I was going to bring up, is that oftentimes, so Virginia, for those of you who don't know, just had their, you know, gubernatorial election.
Gubernatorial. I remember that term from eighth grade Georgia studies, and my eighth grade Georgia studies teacher could not pronounce it. Anyways, go ahead.
Maybe I am your eighth grade Georgia. Anyway, okay, so... Virginia had their, basically their governor election, just this past, what was it? I don't know. In the past week. And it was,
I think it was Wednesday.
It was Wednesday. Thank you. And it shook a lot of, you know, Democratic, you know, party voters or Democratic coalition members up.
It was Tuesday. Okay. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. Anyway, so it shook a lot of the, you know, people up, because Virginia is generally seen as like, you know, Virginia is generally seen as what New Jersey was, which is...
Virginia is just like Washington, D.C. You get what I mean? Like, I guess not anymore, but like, that's just sort of... Virginia is Washington, D.C. So it's quite liberal, and they're quite, you know, they're just very...
With the growing populations of, you know, Alexandria and Fairfax County, and then when you also, I was about to say when you juxtapose it, but it would sound a little too much like that. when you look at it, as well as, you know, the rapid growth in the bigger cities like Charlotte and, you know, Chesapeake, when you look at all of that, you can see clearly that it's echoing the rest of the nation and it's becoming more and more Democratic. So it was altogether a huge shock when this year it elected Republican Youngkin as the governor. Now,
how long was their incumbent sitting? Like the Democratic incumbent, how many years was he the sitting governor?
I believe it was just this one term of his. So it was
really,
yeah. The thing is that Virginia's really dumb in that.
Why did I think he was there for like a bit? Okay, never mind. Well, sorry.
Let's look it up. Ralph.
Or it's rather like Virginia hasn't had a Republican governor in however many years, right? It's.
I think 77. It's been.
It's been 77 years since they have, or they haven't had one since 77.
Yeah, they had one in 77. Okay, look, okay. He served in office he served as the lieutenant governor from 2014 to 2018, and then from 2018 to 2022, he was the governor. So there you go. So, like, he was kind of there.
Okay.
So then, you know, the big thing was that, you know, Virginia is a battleground. Technically, you know, with it, even though it is, you know, 10 points or more Democratic every election, usually, it is still a battleground, because even though, you know, the urban areas, the cities around Washington, D.C., Alexandria, like I said, even though they're urbanizing, they're, you know, becoming bigger, more, you know, voters, younger voters, people of color, even though they're voting more, you also have, you know, the rest of Virginia, which is pretty much, you know, rural or suburban Virginia, and they're all staunchly, you know, staunchly Republican voters. So if I look up right now, actually, Virginia governorship, because I can't remember if it was New Jersey or Virginia that was this way, but one of them hasn't had the governor be part of the same party as the president since like a while ago, and I can't remember. I think it may have been New Jersey, but yeah, because New Jersey had, let's see, Chris Christie, and yeah. So back to Virginia. Sorry, I went off on a tangent there, but Virginia has an increasingly, you know, diversifying population, as with the rest of the United States, but it cannot, you know, or it does not negate the fact that there are, you know, staunch, typically white suburban voters or rural voters voting Republican. So then a big problem with the outcome of this election is that a lot of Democrats were tying, you know, voting rights into this. They were saying that, you know, voting rights are still so suppressed in Virginia, which is true. There's voter suppression all across the nation. You know, they were saying that Virginia is like this basically Jim Crow state still. And, you know, there are still problems with it, with voting and with African-American voters, especially being able to have access to the polls. The problem is that especially I think it's like neo-libs or like the modern age Democrats that will always cling to an excuse in times like this. They'll always be like, I think it's kind of akin to, and not on the same level of course, because the GOP, you know, was inciting violence with their voter fraud claims, but it's kind of almost akin to what the GOP is doing. Because when Democrats lose in a state that they should absolutely have won in, absolutely they should have won in that state, is they'll jump to the excuse of, you know, voter suppression. You know, no one's being allowed to vote. Rather than assuming responsibility for the fact that the reason that, you know, they lost is because they weren't able to, you know, capture the Democratic vote in that way, if that makes any sense. What I'm trying to say is they weren't able to galvanize their voters to get out to the polls. And that's because mainly the Biden administration, however, you know, whoever you want to blame it on, either Biden or his GOP, you know, colleagues themselves, it's one of their faults, because it's the reason that the Biden administration is the one that's, you know, causing more and more Democratic voters to not, you know, feel any courage or not want to get out and vote, because it just feels like we turn around and every single day there's a defeat, right? And especially when you kind of, okay, I'm going to say it, especially when you juxtapose that with the fact that for 4 years, we had, you know, people saying, oh, if we just get a Democrat in 2020, it's all going to be better. You know, it's all going to be, finally, we'll be able to regain all of the civility and all of this, you know, everything will be good and just like sunshine and rainbows. When you have people saying that, of course, that's, you know, subconsciously what people are going to want to expect. So the problem with that is that Virginia is not, absolutely not, a very suppressive state in terms of voter rights. In fact, Virginia has become a bastion for voting rights under the bill that Northam signed, which Ralph Northam was the last governor, right? So Virginia's expansion, you know, of voting protections was huge, right? Republicans have basically always had a grip on Virginia. They've always had it. And then suddenly it started to change. It started to diversify. It started to shift more and more left. So because of that, when more and more Democratic governors got in, they tried to, like, for instance, in 2016, when we had McAuliffe in power, he restored voting rights to like 200,000 felons in the state. Even though, you know, the Republicans were, of course, like, no, if we let criminals vote, then, you know, child abusers are also going to be able to vote. So it's like, you can't say always that, you know, voter suppression, the people aren't being allowed to vote. That's not the case. The case here is that you did not appeal to the voters enough. Mm. You did not, you know, make them want to vote for you. Mm. Even if you say like, oh, well, they should just know that like in these times you have to vote for a Democrat. Otherwise, you're basically voting for a Republican and that's basically just voting for treasonous. That's not good enough. You have to show them that you want their vote and that you will actually do something with their vote.
Absolutely. And I think that it also has to, again, the thing of like you have to earn their vote. Your party has to reflect what your constituency is interested in, et cetera, et cetera, has a lot to do with that. Even policy, this sort of goes back to, I think, our previous episode about uber polarization among the parties. Mm-hmm. But it's like, even policy, I feel like it's either too polarizing to the point where it's like you have these people promising all of these things, and we know that in the current climate, it's like the things that they're proposing, whether it's a governor, whether it is a representative, whether it's a senator, when they're running, like the policies that are in their platform are almost so sort of leftist or so conservative that you know they're never going to pass. So you don't, it's like, there's no even point in voting for them, or much worse, there's no even point in voting. Or they're so moderate that you think, how is this going to bring any change to what is already happening here? If that makes sense. I feel like even the way that sort of elected officials are going about policymaking, it's just, you know what I mean? I just feel like it's not reflective of the times. And it's like, I feel like you know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense. Like, the entire reason that you're running in any area, any district, any region, any state is because you're trying to win those people over and you feel like you can well represent those people. But I feel like everyone is just so out of touch with their constituencies. And on top of that, when it comes to voter suppression and all of these lawmakers saying, oh, it's because their vote is being suppressed, et cetera, et cetera. It's in your title. You're the lawmaker. You know what I mean? Like, I understand not getting the votes, et cetera, et cetera, but that's your entire job. You know, it's to pass legislation, to make amendments to bills that have already been passed, to change that. So it's like, either way, the blame is on them.
And that's the other thing, is that when people get in power, they get comfortable, right? They get like, I'm in power. It's like, now what? Because it's more about getting in power than getting to serve or getting to help the people, right? So when people are like, even we talked about this last time too, I think, why did we bust our asses to get all these Democrats into office if they're not doing anything, right?
That's what I was saying. Like, it's because they promised these things that seemed like so good to be true. You vote them in, but it's, I feel like also subconsciously people knew that like these ideas that they had were never going to pass, especially considering how polarized the parties are at this moment in time. I don't know. So I feel like it can't even be entirely blamed on them. Like, this is like this whole thing of like Democrats versus Republicans and their sort of opinions or their takes on voting, et cetera, et cetera. It's not new information to us as voters. I feel like it's been long established. Is it right for them to be corrupt and for them to be fooling their constituencies? No, but it's almost like, damn, we should have seen that coming. Like, we were all like, oh yeah, Democrats are like, Democrats, like, they have control in the House, the control in the Senate and the presidency. Woo! Nothing. Fluff.
And
now we're like nearly a year into his presidency, and now it feels like in November it feels like, oh well, shit, what was I expecting? It's Biden, for thank God. Like, you know what I mean? He's like, he's about to die.
Well, and
what did I expect?
I saw this interesting article. I don't know where it was. It was on one of these like not that prestigious like news outlets thing, and it was one
like Atlanta City News, like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess. But it was one of these sites where it allows you to like dislike or like the article, and it had like 17,000 dislikes and like 500 likes, and it was titled, "Why would I, comma, an Indigenous American or a POC or a woman, comma, bother voting in the U.S.?" And so I went to read it, and it was an interesting.
Wait, can I just ask something? What was the need for the commas?
It's very important to make sure that everyone knew that they had used the correct grammatical structures. Thank you.
Okay.
Anyway.
They were basically like, why should I as a minority vote?
Yeah. And it's not just as a minority. What I read in their thing was more about them being an Indigenous American. And it was like about how, first of all, I, as an Indigenous American, have no, you know, interest in voting in an occupying power. And I thought about that, and I was like, I guess, like, that's a, I can't tell if it's, you know, it's, even now, I'm still trying to figure out if I agree with that or not.
Yeah, isn't that like the whole thing of what we don't advocate for? It's like this thing.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking it. Because at first I was like, okay, well, that's what we say not to do. But then I was like, okay, well, I don't have the right to like tell an Indigenous American what to do with their vote, right?
But what I'm saying is like, yeah. that's like, isn't that like the choice that we're all as humanity, as like, isn't that the question that we're all asking ourselves? Like, do we wake up today and do we decide to care about this thing, or do we decide to not care and just live our lives? Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Because you know what I mean? Every turn of phrase, I feel like, you know what I mean? Every sort of corner that you are pushed into or whatever, it's all, you always just end up coming to this realization, you as in royally you, as in all of us. I feel like we all just tend to come to the conclusion that, does any of this matter? You know what I mean? But it's like, but then it's also like, then what is the point? And I get that. I get that, what that person is saying, in the sense of like,
yeah,
we all have those moments, or I was telling you earlier, I've been living in that moment for the past week of like, what does it matter? What will any of my actions amount to? What does this podcast mean? Why are we sitting here an hour every other week and talking about this if it won't live up to anything, if it doesn't mean anything? Because at the end of the day, the lawmakers are just gonna make whatever the fuck they want to make. Oh my god, I just cursed. Oh my god. Okay. It's, you're like, I'm having a meltdown right now, and you're just like, shut up. But I'm
just like, probably like,
no,
okay,
but I
okay,
mean,
all right.
Like, it's this thing of like, what is my vote gonna matter even if I vote this person, if they're just gonna end up doing whatever they want to do and not even listen to me? Because that's what I've been seeing. Like, this is a cycle that's been happening for as long as, you know, I've been able to vote. So what does it matter? So I'm just trying to speak to the larger conversation of like, no, this is the thing that this person was saying is very relatable. And on top of that, them sort of bringing their narrative in as an Indigenous person is also sort of very relatable as a woman of color myself. Because oftentimes, like, again, two very completely different things. I'm not trying to compare myself to an Indigenous person because that's a very different experience altogether. But I'm saying it in the sense of like, so long we're, as minority groups, we're told that we don't matter. And every day, like to this day, like whether it's at school, whether it's in your own house by your parents, whether it's on the street, we're constantly told you don't matter. Like, it doesn't, what you have to say doesn't matter. Your experiences don't matter because like, we're all here and we're all doing the same monotonous thing. Like, that's something that we internalize. And then you also come over here and you as an immigrant, you come over to America and you live here and you make a living for yourself. And then you see all these lawmakers do crazy shit that seems like should never happen in a country that's as progressive and democratic as America, but then it does. And then it feels like, what does my vote matter? And then I feel like that is the like little window where those lawmakers then come in, and that's where, like, you know what I mean, the voter suppression acts come in. Because that's like, well, here you have these groups of people who don't care already, so what does, like, you know what I mean, they're not going to react if I pass all of this legislation, because guess what, they don't care already. That was a whole tangent that I went off on, but I'm saying we're making ourselves more vulnerable by saying things like, oh, what does my vote matter? We are negatively fueling this cycle. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I feel like we just cycled through like all the possible emotions you could have had in like just like 3 minutes.
Can you leave me alone?
I'm not criticizing you. I'm not criticizing you at all.
You were so, your bit was so like news reporty in a good way, not in a bad way. You were just talking like a professional. I could imagine you on the other side of this in a red tie and a suit, and I'm here just sitting having a meltdown. But go ahead.
Anyway,
I'm so annoyed.
One of One of the other things that was, you know, a huge thing for like lots of people to realize was that your vote, the other thing is, it's like you're almost being gaslit by history. And I know that sounds like super weird, but the thing is, you're constantly told, like, people fought for your vote. People fought for the right for you guys to vote. And you're just going to waste it?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, whether you're not even allowed to reach a conclusion about whether or not you should vote on your own, because it's like, you're a bad person if you waste it. You're a bad person if you let all of that work go to waste. You know what I mean?
But as someone who does that gaslighting, I think it's completely acceptable. I mean, not so much the part of, like, you should be honoring the historical figures that have come before you and have fought for your right to vote. I mean, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, I love you, homegirl, but, like, I think it's more so of, like, the thing of, like, it's so easy. How lazy do you have to be not to vote? Like, it's less about the, it's, for me, it's more from a place of, like, anger, just at people's ignorance and laziness than at, like, them disrespecting the people that have come before them. It's more so, like, literally, you do 100 million things that don't matter every day. Like, that actually don't matter every day. You know what I mean? But you can't do this one thing. Like, you spend hours and hours and hours scrolling on your Twitter feed or on your TikTok, but you can't do this. Like, you know what I mean? Especially because, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, things for a period were so accessible, especially with 2020, with it having the greatest voter turnout ever in all of history. And out of that, out of all of those voters, such a chunk being from mail-in ballots, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, things have never been more accessible to you. And by you not taking advantage of that again is sending a signal to lawmakers being like, oh, never mind, they still don't care. We can pass all of this shit and not expect any reaction from them. Like, especially in politics, everything is connected. And it is like a cycle, like we were talking about history earlier, I think, but it's like the whole thing of the social contract, right? It's like a give and receive thing on both ends. If we as citizens aren't participating in our democracy, then you know what I mean? We're not going to get the results that we want. And then we can't just sit here and be like, you can't sit here and being like complaining, but like not voting for the change that you're looking for. You know?
I feel like that's also what this person who wrote this article was referencing as well. You know, not to be redundant there, but like, they were also talking about the fact that, like, even though, you know, they do vote, they had said, even though they were talking about, like, sometimes I'm wondering if I shouldn't vote. But they were saying, like, something about how, you know, it feels like where it should be a symbiotic. Is that the right word?
Yes, that's a relationship. It feels symbiotic. It is symbiotic. I think it is, but
it could be, but it's not. That's what they were saying.
Yeah,
is that it's more like parasitic. Look at me with my honors biology knowledge. Anyway, it's more of a parasitic.
Wait, now I need to know. It's parasitic. Wait. Parasitic is when one is benefiting and one is being caused harm. Symbiotic, is that mutually?
Yes, mutually beneficial.
It's mutually beneficial. And then what's the third one? Asymbiotic?
Do we
mutualism? No, Vivek, this is wrong.
I'm looking it up right now. Mutualism relationships. Here we go.
I think one is mutualism.
It says the two types are of obligate and facultative. That's not the same thing. That's not what we're talking about.
Should I pull up my apes notes right now?
Yes,
it's commensalism. Cool. Commensalism is when one is benefiting and the other one isn't affected. Symbiosis is when both are mutually benefiting. Symbiotic, however you say it. Parasitic is when one is being harmed. Okay, I got it. Go ahead.
Yeah. This writer was saying that it seems like it should be a symbiotic relationship. It should be symbiosis, but it's more like a parasitic relationship in which, you know, the voters vote in these people, but then the people who the people voted in do something to harm the people who voted them in. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so exactly. I was thinking it, and I was like, yeah, I mean, it does seem like that. But then the other thing is, your other option is to not do anything and just let it get worse even faster. Like, at least if you're voting people in, if you're, you know, doing things, you're trying, right? It's better than nothing. But if you're not voting, whatever's going to happen, even if it's going to be bad, is still going to happen, right?
Yeah. I feel like we come back to this conversation every episode. Yeah. It's the same thing of just like, I don't know, man. It's like, it's so easy to do the thing that you should be doing. I don't know why you would put in the effort to not do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, to go out of your way.
Yeah, go out of your way and not vote when everyone else is. Anyways, this has, again, this is going back to something that you were saying earlier about Virginia and sort of how it was maybe Republican, like, the ideology was primarily Republican for a long period, and then all of a sudden it switched and sort of liberal now or whatever. But I was sort of thinking of, like, yeah, I mean, you have to think, like, and you were talking about rural areas in Virginia compared to areas around D.C. and et cetera, et cetera. And it made me, like, again, to sort of go back into a push last year and think about how, like, it was, like, the anti-federalist that dominated Virginia. Like, Thomas Jefferson was from Virginia. And, yeah, you're absolutely...
Mm-hmm. He was the governor.
Huh?
He was the governor of Virginia for a while.
Was he? Yeah, he was the governor, and then he went to France, and then he came back, and then he became Secretary of State.
French. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's
not it. He became French.
Sorry, what did you say?
When you said he became, and I said French, he didn't become French. He became the Secretary of State. Ignore me.
Yeah. Wait, did he become Secretary of State? I feel like he did. I
thought he became the third president. Oh, you mean before that?
Yeah, with Washington. Anyways, that's not this. But yeah, it's very much of, like, speaking to the gubernatorial election that just happened there this past week. Yeah, for some reason you telling me that mm-hmm. sort of sparked that, because I was like, oh wait, yeah, never mind, you're right. Like, it's not, because when I think of DC, I think of all, like, when I was saying liberal, I sort of more so how liberal-minded people are, in a sense, not, like, political ideology, in terms of just
mm-hmm.
being bold and being liberal no matter what they believe in terms of being outspoken. But,
right.
Yeah, you're right. It actually, yeah. So, anyways, yeah. I don't know what that epiphany was.
In fact, let me pull up my favorite redistricting website, and let's take a look at Virginia, shall we?
Take a field trip to Virginia.
So, Virginia, like we said, it's a very... Is something wrong, Kipana?
No.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Also, anyway, I want to say that for anyone who thinks that, like... I don't know, I feel like a lot of people see some version of you, but, like, literally, this is... Him being on this redistricting website is, like, the core of our relationship. I'll just be saying anything, and he'll just be redistricting.
Yeah, like, I don't...
Like, this is...
Yeah, like, this is what I do 100% of the time.
100% of the time.
So, yeah, there are certain, you know, urbanized areas. I'm looking at it right now. Mainly, if you go to West Virginia, what a surprise. If you go
Here's another thing I want to know. Is West Virginia still its own state, or did they merge back? They haven't, right?
No.
Okay.
I thought there were
like conversations happening about them merging back.
No. Yes, but like with crackheads, not with serious like people who go make it happen.
Oh, I thought it was okay, never mind.
Please. I don't think we can be friends anymore.
No,
don't know anything about my redistricting.
No, I thought this was like a serious conversation, especially when they like DC was getting statehood or whatever. I thought they were also like, let's just push West Virginia back into the mix. Anyways, go ahead.
No, because they said, because all the Republicans made a big fuss about how, like, it would dilute the power of, like, Republican voters, even though West Virginia, if you add it to Virginia, probably has the power to make Virginia turn Republican again. So, in fact, it would benefit them, but I'm just saying. But, yeah. So, basically, the conclusion that we have reached in this episode is that everything sucks, nothing's ever going to get better, but why not try?
No, we were going to look at your maps.
Oh, okay. So I'm looking at my maps right now. Roanoke, wasn't that like, that was like important, right? Roanoke, sure. Remember?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I thought you were talking about some like hiking brand, like Roanoke. Like, let's go hiking. Like no. Patagonia.
I feel violated by this string of thought right here. But anyway, what I was saying was that Roanoke is actually one of the Democratic cities. I don't know why I felt the need to tell you that, but it is. The first colony was one of the most Democratic. But yeah, so I'm looking at Virginia right now, and basically it looks red except for three spots, and that would be, the first one is obviously DC around that area, then the second one is around, like, I think this is Richmond, and then this last one is around like Norfolk or like Virginia Beach or Chesapeake. So
I love Norfolk. Okay, go ahead.
So basically, other than like the cities, which is the same situation as lots of other states, there's not much, you know, of the Democratic vote anywhere else. But then the problem is that when you have these people compacted into cities like this, you also have problems with, you know, polling places being too clogged. You have problems with, you know, more people in poverty because of, you know, higher standards of living or higher costs of living. So basically it's all like a culmination of a perfect storm, because not only do you have voters who are tending more to vote to the left, you also have those same voters being, you know, unable to do that. That was my spiel.
Okay. I just saw, not me saying okay. Okay. I just saw this comment on this website that I'm reading, and I would like to, I don't know.
Jihad.
Yeah. Huh?
GG, tell me, no.
Okay, yeah. So, I don't know. It kind of goes to what we were saying earlier, and even the article that was written by that Indigenous person and how they were talking about voting. But it says, it's quite long, but it says, it seems to me that voting's foremost function is to pacify. The actual effects of voting are so minimal because they're supposed to be people in power. Do not want to let go of that power, and even the mind with the strongest conviction will corrupt by the alienating processes of making policies. The government is the oppressive force that segregates and disempowers people. Every concession on their part is a liberty that they had no right to take from us in the first place. A society that is based on the idea of solidarity instead of competition does not need violent hierarchical structures to keep it from falling apart. This society is built on fear and hatred. We need to move forward into a future of love and compassion. But
I feel like people have always said that.
Yeah, but
that, like democracy depends on good people.
Mm.
It depends on people being morally correct.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like, it even goes to your metaphor of parasitism. Mm-hmm. Of their sort of being this very blatant violation of the social contract, of there is no giving or receiving on their end, but there's a lot of expectation on our end for us to do so.
Right.
Like it even speaks to the argument of like, what is the point of voting? Because whether we vote or not, they continue to do whatever they want, being rampant and acting like toddlers.
Right. And again, this is just us like talking about stuff. Of course you should still vote, right? Of course we should still do those things. This is like another level of thinking with regards to like if given that we are voting, let's at least analyze what we're doing.
Yeah, it's more so to on like, it's almost like theory of like, is government functioning at all in this day and age?
Yeah,
because it's like there are too many problems. And I feel like, again, maybe that's where party ideology comes in, because, you know, it's how like Democrats are for governmental or federal intervention and Republicans are all for small government, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It also feels like in this day and age, there are so many problems, everything stemming from climate change to being systemically segregated, mm-hmm. being disproportionately given resources in times of crisis, from that to patriarchal structures to the wage gap, to the wage gap between genders and or the gender pay gap, sorry, everything. And then mm-hmm. on, like, you have all of these huge issues that sort of seem otherworldly, but you also have crime rates, you know what I mean, district to district. So it almost, you know what I mean? Like, I was saying this earlier before we started this episode, like, people can't even go to concerts without getting assaulted, without there being an invasion of privacy, without getting killed. Like, that's right. where we are at. And it just feels like, how much can the government step in to solve these problems? How much does us vote, how much does our vote affect all of these problems that seem to be coming about, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel like when we think of voting, we think of just like, I'm voting for tax reform, or I'm voting for so my son or my daughter or whoever can get into college, to this college, because they can, based off of merit and not because we're from a low-income family. Like, I feel like people look at that, but they don't think of, like, sort of the higher social commentary, how it controls all of that too. Anyways, yeah, I went off on a tangent again.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This episode really went off the rails, I guess.
It really did. I feel like there were so many more. Do we want to keep going?
I mean, I think we've kind of rounded all our bases, I guess. One thing to keep in mind is, again, like we said, everyone, your AdSense will be going to the NAACP's fund to fight voter suppression, to expand access to voting for lots of, you know, low income or inner city person of color families. And then just stay educated. Oh my God, that was so cringy.
No, but I'm like, even just playing back this conversation in my head, and I feel like there were so many more topics that we could have dissected into, like the Voting Rights Act of 1965, then the Civil Rights Act, and then even the filibuster. I know Vivek and I, like, that's something that we were talking a lot about when the legislation in Georgia was passed, the voter suppression bill was passed. In Georgia earlier this year, we were talking a lot about, like, the filibuster and how it's employed, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like we didn't even touch any of that, and it was such a superficial conversation. But, yeah, like you said, proceeds will be going to the NAACP, so, yeah.
And everything sucks. Just
but please vote still, because your vote matters so much. And if you can vote, and even if you can't vote, like, whether it's because you're not legal or because you're not of age, tell the people around you to vote. Also, just, like, keep having conversations and stay political. Like, stay sort of...
That's a whole nother topic. Apoliticism. I hate kids so much sometimes, but maybe that's not to be covered today.
And don't be, like... Don't be dumb. Don't be, like...
Don't be like us, either, but...
Don't be like us. I don't know what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is, like, just... Keep being aware, because this was, again, something I was saying earlier before we started this episode. It's like, ultimately, sort of, not to be depressing, but ultimately the bigger picture of life isn't it's fun to think about, like, what outfit you're going to wear to school tomorrow, or, like, what you're, you know what I mean? Like, what your mom's going to pack for your lunch and all of that boring, mundane stuff. Mm-hmm. Sure, it's fun to talk about, but, like, literally so many people are dying and their lives are being threatened every single day that it's, like, You know what I mean? It's like,
that changed. Yeah, like literally drastic.
People are dying and you're here thinking about what you're gonna wear to school tomorrow. Like, please. If you can spend,
not your gaslighting.
Yeah, we literally gaslighting everyone right now. Like, it's all fun. It's fun to talk about your love life and your relationship and et cetera, and the drama and how no
but
one.
But people are dying, guys.
But people are dying. Okay, so vote. That's all I have to say. I'm not okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And don't be a bad person. Okay, don't be like a stupid, dumb, gandhi kanjar.
And don't bully Vivek. Okay, stop doing that. All of you guys need to stop. Get off his back and start being nice to him. Actually, you don't have to be nice to him, but stop not for real. Him.
Well, you could have just left it at that, but okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Brought to you by Deekshu Devra Sethi for editing, Vanshika Khatwani and Jasmine White for graphics, Puneet Bajwa and Sanj Varyani for socials, and to my wonderful co-host Kirtana for putting up with me.